Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're talking to Kevin Bunty. He's the chief engineer at a small market group of radio stations, AM, FM, and TV station, too, talking about virtualization. You know how small markets sometimes move to new technologies because they have to before the big markets do. We're talking about it coming up on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the Ruby console from Lavo, see Lavo and your future at lavo.com/twert. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and I'm not in my usual Telos Alliance branded studio in Nashville. No, I'm actually at the mothership today. I'm at the Telos Alliance in Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm here. Me and my colleagues have been preparing for the big NAB show. And so we've been, you know, racking equipment, configuring it, making sure all the IP addresses are right. Ooh, man, is that a job. I mean, we basically, in 3 days, we basically built 3.5 studios worth of gear, and 4 studios, actually, and did a whole Telos VX system, and got, you know, telephony into all the studios. Of course, all this goes into a booth at NAB. We also, at the same time, built, configured, and racked up the gear for the Broadcast Asia show. It takes a lot longer to get the gear over to Singapore, so that has to get done about the same time as the NAB show prep. So there's a big old truck arriving here in a few days, and it'll take away the crates and mosey them out west to Las Vegas. Anyway, that's where I am today. I'm at the Telos Alliance in Cleveland, Ohio, and delighted to be here and glad that they give me a little time to do this show and to bring you some great broadcast equipment and technology education. All right, enough about me. Let's head over to the East Coast, where Chris Tobin is standing by. Hey, Chris, welcome in. How are you?
I'm well. I'm doing well. I'm glad to hear you guys getting ready for NAB and everything's come together. It's just a short couple of weeks away. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Is it 3 weeks? Yeah, it's about 3 weeks away, I suppose.
Yeah, it's about 3 weeks, yeah.
We have an advanced team that I'll be part of that this year. Going to get out there like about the Tuesday or Wednesday before NAB. And start, you know, we got to make, you know, one thing we have to do, people don't think about this, but they're going to put carpet down on the floor, right? And they put down the carpet underlay. We've got to specify the cables that run, you know, from one kiosk to another, where, you know,
yes,
the core switch is what, you know, yeah, lots of cables to run. And inevitably, the contractors who do that don't always do it right. You know, they bind a cable or twist it, or you get to where the kiosk is supposed to be, and there's literally 6 inches of cable coming up out of the floor. You know, no, dude, we could use 10 feet of cable coming out of the floor. So, yeah, it's a little difficult. So we have to be on site when that cabling happens to try to make that right. So it's always fun.
Yeah, your best bet is to make cable runs that have Molex-type connectors at each end, so that when you come up short on the carpet out exit, you just plug in the other end, extend it to your cabinet.
Yeah. We've done that. And part of the packing is those Ethernet cable, you know, male-to-male adapters. So you can plug two Ethernet cables together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That is definitely in the road cases. Oh, my goodness. We bring a bunch of cases. We have these big steel cases we've had for, I don't know, 25 years or so. And they have survived a lot of NAB shows and other shows as well. Yeah, like radio shows, too. Hey, let's go ahead and bring in our guest here. Our guest is a fellow who I met on Facebook just a few weeks ago. And I liked so much what he had to say about broadcast engineering that I said, hey, Kevin, would you come and be on our show and talk to us about the technologies and the techniques that you're putting to use in what is ostensibly a reasonably small market? And so our guest is Kevin Bunty. Kevin, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Welcome, Kurt. You sure you got the right guy?
Absolutely.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
I got interested in you because you were talking about virtualization, and just to foreshadow what's coming up and what you're going to be, what we're going to be talking about maybe a little bit of what you're going to teach us is about virtualizing the broadcast infrastructure at a small market radio station. And you've got a TV station there too, right?
Correct. We're AM, FM, and TV. Family owned. So we're kind of a rarity nowadays. So it's an honor to be working on that.
You're in a town that I've heard of before, but I don't exactly know where it is. Zanesville, Ohio. Tell us about that.
It's about an hour east of Columbus, Ohio. So if you were to hop from Cleveland down to 77, head west off of 70 there, and you'll run right into us.
Ah, so, okay. So kind of southeast.
The best thing we're known for is we have a bridge you can turn left or right onto. You can't go straight or you end up in the river.
Okay. That's hard to imagine.
Yeah, it's confusing at times. Yeah, it's we're sometimes known as the Y City Bridge. We have the Y City Bridge.
What does the bridge go over?
It's three rivers, two rivers, the Coshocton River, and the Muskingum River, and they flow into one, just the Muskingum River, and it continues on from there. But they built a bridge right as the rivers intersect into each other.
Okay. So you can turn left and go over one and right or go over the other one.
Exactly.
Wow.
So
it's
kind of interesting.
So we're going to be talking about virtualization, and we've been doing a little bit of this at my radio station. We won't get all into it yet. We're going to get through a couple of sponsors here real quick. But what Kevin's going to be sharing with us is what I firmly believe, and I know that Chris feels the same way, is the future for broadcast infrastructure. We're going to get more and more away from purpose-built equipment and more into PCs that are running, whatever operating system. A lot of them could be Linux, some could be Windows, and these are going to be performing the jobs at broadcast facilities that we do now with dedicated gear. Of course, a lot of the dedicated gear is already running software inside it. I mean, right behind me here, take a look at this. This is a Telos VX system, and inside this is a little system on module, a SOM. And it's running Linux, and then it's running the VX app and all the services, all the daemons on top of that. Well, you can take this and run it on a regular server. And in fact, that's what the VX Enterprise has become. So just an example of gear moving. Oh, and by the way, at some point, that'll be available as a virtual machine, a Docker or whatever format that people want it in. It'll be available in a format that'll just plug right in onto a virtual machine infrastructure. So we'll talk about that. And Kevin's doing that in a small market, and that's exciting to see. That's where a lot of innovation happens, it seems. Small markets first. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at CalRec and Angry Audio. Let's hear from them.
CalRec Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I.O. gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
I encourage you to go to that website, calrec.com/twert. If you're going to the NAB show, of course, you can take a look at the CalRec Type R right there. Ooh, Angry Audio. Hey, you know, studio guests are only human, and humans cough, they sniff, and clear their throats, even on the air. Well, cure this with the Angry Audio Guest Gizmo. You can press the cough button, mute the mic. Every guest needs one. You know what else guests need? Well, they need headphones, which is why each Guest Gizmo has a studio-quality headphone amp with individual volume control. Anything else? Well, you've seen those mic arms with the built-in LED tallies? They're gorgeous, but how do you get them to light up? Well, Guest Gizmo does that too, illuminating the red light whenever the mic is hot. And installing the Guest Gizmo in your studio furniture could not be easier. You just need that right there, a 2 3/4 inch hole saw and a steady hand. No router required. Your studio gets a clean custom appearance and you get all the credit. Check out the Guest Gizmo and all the other cool gadgets at angryaudio.com. That's angryaudio.com. Check them out, would you? And thanks a lot to Angry Audio and Calrec/Twert for being our sponsors on This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Kevin Bunty's our guest, and we're going to jump right into this. Kevin, you had to have a start on this path to virtualization. I guess first, tell you what, you mentioned earlier today to me that you've got about 50 virtual machines running, and that means you're not running 50 desktop PCs doing things. That means you don't have 50 fans and 50 power supplies and 50 spinning hard drives and 50 CPUs, individual CPUs, and all the other junk that, and cables and all that stuff. So give me an idea of just kind of what you've got virtualized, and then we'll go on to get you to tell a story about how you got to that point. So what's virtualized at WHIZ radio and TV?
So the biggest thing that we have virtualized right now is our automation system. I'm actually looking at the screen right now, and we have Broadcast Electronics AudioVault Flex for our automation using the Wheatnet 24-channel Wheatnet driver. I apologize for that. And we have two of those machines running, a primary and a backup, just like you would for any other reason. And so there, we got that on there. Then we have our streaming computers. Then we have our email server, our phone system. We have PRTG that monitors all of our servers, our network switches, our point-to-point links to our tower sites, just to make sure everything's behaving the way it's supposed to be. Then we also have our TV automation, a discrepancy board. So if there's anything wrong with programming or equipment, people can just post to there, and I check it every morning, or my assistants will go ahead and check it every morning, and we'll see what we need to knock out first thing in the morning, get that taken care of. You could go on and on. So
I think earlier today you were telling me that also you have a number of sales and administrative functions running in virtual machines, and they access it from a small desktop computer on their desks, yeah?
Right. We have two wide orbit servers. They're running on here. We also have a Markatron for trafficking, Music Master for music. And all they have to do is log on to a local desktop or a laptop, enter in their credentials, select the machine that they, or the software that they want to go to, and they log right into it and they're ready to go. Just as if it was physically right in front of them. They know no other than an extra step of logging in. That's it. They don't know that it's not physically in front of them, other than they can go anywhere with it.
Yeah. Which I guess that means that they could do work from home if they needed to. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. And actually we have our TV sales manager. He was actually on a cruise out in the, I think, the Pacific Ocean. And there was a problem with one of the clients. He logged in remotely, did his thing, just had no problem with it. He just paid for the internet access on the cruise ship. And he had everything in front of him.
And you know, he
always tells me.
We've had remote access capability. I mean, hey, back in the mid-90s, I worked for Scott Studios, and we were using, I don't know, maybe it was PC Anywhere, you know, something to get us in remotely. And so just getting it remotely isn't such a big deal, but doing it into things that are, you know, I don't know, centrally located, that are common, that are on reliable hardware. And maybe we ought to talk about this reliability factor, because on the one hand, some people don't want all their eggs in one basket, right? That seems, as broadcast engineers, we like having backup systems. We like having liabilities spread around just a little bit. And so maybe you can tell me about, you know, if I'm wrongheaded in thinking that more computers somehow equals more reliability because the chances are spread out. Give me a little, you know, education on why a server system might be better.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a double-edged sword because, yeah, you do have a lot in just one basket. You know, we split it 50-50, you know, 25 machines per virtual host. And then what we do on top of that is, as I mentioned before, we have our primary and backup automation system, and they're on two separate machines. So that way, if a machine ever were to fail, which it has happened before, the other system just kicks in and continues on just as normal. I mean, exactly the way it's supposed to. The only difference is, instead of trying to scratch your heads like, why is this not working anymore? Is it the hard drive? Is it the memory? Did the power supply go bad? Did somebody trip over a power cable or the network cable? And did somebody spill something in the keyboard? Mm-hmm. All you got to do, we use VMware for our hypervisors. And yeah. All I have to do is just say, hey, move this machine down to this other host, start it back up. And so instead of a couple of hours to a couple of days of trying to figure out what possibly could be wrong, I've spent 5 minutes and I got that system back up and running again. And then I could take mm-hmm. my time with level heads and figure out exactly what is wrong with this one particular machine. Plus yeah. the quality of hardware that you have. Oh, go ahead, Kurt.
Oh, I was just saying, in the second half of the show, I'd like to delve a little bit more into how engineers like you and me can get educated on this. And I'm foreshadowing, alluding to your IT guy has been a lot of help to you. So that's a world that I didn't grow up in, but man, there's plenty of people who have. We'll get to that. But go back to this hardware thing, because I've noticed the same thing. I mean, I built a bunch of radio stations in Mississippi that I'm part owner of, and we built them with cheap refurbished Dell desktop machines. We had cables everywhere and power supplies failing left and right, and hard drives, you know, every once in a while would fail. And then we bought, honestly, some refurbished Dell servers. Some people like Dell, some like HP, some like a Ford, some like a Chevy. And I've just been so impressed. I mean, I sound like such a noob, right, coming into the world of, hey, servers. But I never worked at a radio station that could afford these things. And so we bought literally some – I think we, by the time they were all tricked out, maybe about $1,000 for mm-hmm. what would a few years ago been a $5,000 or $6,000 server. And we've put all our stations but one on this one particular server in terms of the Rivendell playout systems. And they've been fabulous, just fabulous. Problems have just gone away. Of course, they're rated and dual power supplies and all that. So anyway, go ahead. You tell me about your hardware experience.
Yeah. Well, the thing is for us was we're noticing as we would buy a system, it would come in and I'm, you know, computer geek. I'd love to pop the case open, take a look inside and see what's in it. And there was times where it's like, oh, well, I know I've seen this stuff before. I just fixed my relative's computer and it had that they got from Walmart. It's the exact same board in here. So it's like that doesn't give you a very warm, fuzzy feeling inside. So what we've done instead is we use HP Enterprise servers. Ours are DL560 Gen 10s. And, you know, you mentioned dual power supplies. Ours actually have four. We can lose two power supplies and still operate just fine. It's got dual Xeon processors and that operate at 3.2 gigahertz. I can put two more in there. So if I ever needed more space, processing power, I can have it for a price. It's also, they each have 256 gigs of error correcting memory. That's something you don't get in your typical PC is, you know, the old IT adage is like, well, have you turned it off and back on again? What you're doing is you're clearing the RAM, cleaning it out and putting everything back in there again. ECC RAM goes, hey, there's something wrong here. And just like you have a RAID for your hard disks, it knows that there's something wrong there. We'll either try to repair it or refresh the information, ask for a refresh of information. So you don't have that. It's like, man, this thing's just really wonky right now. You know, we've never had, I'm never going to say never, but yeah, rarely do we have a situation where, you know, it's like, man, this computer's just acting really weird. Let me just power it off all the way and back on. Hey, it's fine again for 6 months, you know, before we have another problem. You know, rarely do we see that anymore. So, and the other thing is, you know, we deploy external storage from our hypervisor from VMware. So, and it's a tool, it's a dual 10 gigabit link down to 24 solid, or no, we're upgrading to solid state hard drives because of the sheer amount of VMs that we're running, because we plan on at least another 10 more this year. But right now they're just Seagate Barracuda 15,000 RPM drives. I can buy them on eBay for, I think it's $200 a piece, a little bit pricey, but these are, you know, IT data center grade drives. So, and we utilize ZFS file system on top of there, just using free open source software. And that's the best part, is really the price in this has just been in us buying the support contracts for VMware and the hardware. Of course, you have the cost of support contracts for your other stuff, but, you know, the software we have on our storage system, it's free. It's Linux-based. Actually, it's BSD-based. It's ZFS. I can do snapshots. I do snapshots every hour. So if I were to be attacked by ransomware, okay, I roll back an hour or two, and I'm back on the air. It takes 5 minutes to do a rollback. So I'm not too concerned about that stuff anymore. And there's been times where we had to do that, where it's like, okay, there's a machine. We've never had a ransomware situation, but it's like, man, I really messed up a software update. I need to start over from scratch. Well, I'll just roll back an hour, start all over like it never happened. I did that once with the automation system. I installed something I was not supposed to, and yeah, it took it off air. It's like, okay, switched back up, roll back to the previous snapshot, away I go. That's not something you get with a regular desktop computer or a physical machine. I mean, if you do, it takes a lot of work to get it set up. But, and the other great thing is, you know, when you go to do your data backups and you just back up those snapshots. So it's like, oh, for some reason, the entire RAID failed. Okay, well, I can repoint it to this backup and boot everything back up like nothing happened, and it doesn't know any difference.
So give me an idea of how many virtual machines will you put on a single server?
Mm-hmm. That really depends on the system you're trying to use. We have our systems with their Intel Xeon processors with hyper-threading. That gives us 72 cores per machine. That's quite a few. And so we can easily run 100 VMs, I suspect, before I have to upgrade the processing power in these machines. However, my desktop computer right now, which is an AMD Athlon FX 85, whatever, I have 4 virtual machines running on there. I'm not having any problems or any slowdowns. I'm actually using a virtual machine right now to communicate with everyone here. So,
oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
I want to ask Chris a couple things. Since we're talking with Kevin Bunty here in Zanesville, Ohio, and back in the mid-90s, Chris, when I went to work for Scott Studios, in fact, Chris, that's when I met you at ABC Radio Networks. I noticed that when we visited big city radio stations, they wanted some kind of digital replacement for cart machines. They didn't want an automation system per se. Whereas the small market stations, you know, they wanted to automate. Of course, they wanted to, you know, they couldn't get people in there, or they didn't want to have people in there. So, Chris, what's been your experience in a big market, New York City, on this topic of virtualization?
Well, the virtualization here in the city is happening. I mean, I talked to several folks who are using it on different platforms. I mean, I use it at my place for a couple of things. And you know, just as Kevin pointed out, you know, we've had issues with either corruption on files or possible, you know, malware, and we just roll back, you know, delete the file, whatever you want to call it, and go back to normal, and everything's great. But over the years, it's always been, you know, redundancy, fault tolerance, and a lot of the early technologies in the virtual world when they were coming out were so geared toward, if you will, the enterprise platform outside of broadcast that a lot of folks were sort of leery about whether or not it'll work. So now it's the tables have turned, and as Kevin pointed out, you know, he's running four machines, VMs on his desktop in the office. So he's got 24 running in the back for everything else. It's, yeah, it's just a question of what you want to commit. You know, it's no longer a need to worry about, well, I don't know, it's a new technology kind of thing. No more. You know, I mean, there's big dollars involved as far as what can go wrong, but now you can implement this stuff with such fault tolerance, it's not even a question.
Okay. So that, to me, that's the key, is fault tolerance. Actually, the key for me is learning how to do more of this stuff. I mean, I've got Parallels. That's a virtual machine on my Mac here. But other than that, I really haven't played much. We have some virtual machines at my radio stations. I'm not the guy who set them up. And I can go in and use each virtual machine, and I know it's virtual, and we're doing streaming, and we're doing you know, our automation playout systems. I just feel like I've got a lot to learn. That's one reason why I'm excited to have Kevin and people like Kevin on the show to talk to us about this, you know, get me motivated to find out what I need to do to start learning about this myself, how I need to get my feet wet. We're going to talk about how Kevin got his feet wet in a few minutes. Kevin, I wonder if you could, before we go to our next break, paint any more of the picture of actual operations. In radio, you said you've got AudioVault Flex running in virtual machines, and you've got the Wheatnet IP audio driver. So that just spews out, you know, Wheatnet streams on your AOIP network. Is your AOIP network separate from your regular business network?
It's a separate VLAN, but it's using the same switches, exact same switches, HP Enterprise, or now Aruba 2920. Wheatstone actually says, you know, they recommend Cisco. That's what they support. And I was like, no, I'm glutton for punishment. I'm going to put it on HP switches instead. and, you know, I have no problems with that. What we have coming out of the VM host is we have two network cables coming out, and they're running at 10 gigabit each, with a switch that I got off eBay, with 10 gigabit network cards that I got off of eBay. You'll see a theme here. And it's amazing. There's people here who's like, okay, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to upgrade this stuff. I don't just get this out of the way. I'll buy it.
Yeah.
And so we run 10 gigabit in. We use probably 20-30% of that network capacity. So we got plenty of room to grow. And what that's allowing us, so we don't have any audio drops or glitches or oddities like sometimes you would with audio over IP if you're overtaxing the network. And the other thing is like, as I mentioned before, with our external storage from the VMs, you know, our news editors for the TV side, when they come in with their footage, they take their data card, plug it into the computer, upload it immediately to the storage system. They don't store any of it on their computer, and they edit directly from there. We're only doing 720p video resolution right now, but we've tested it all the way up to 4K. No problem. We put 10 gigabit network cards in there as well and ran across fiber optic cable. And I know to some people it's like, man, 10 gigabit, fiber optic cable, 4K video, this is starting to sound a little pricey. And for us, I'll admit, yeah, it was a little bit when you add it all together. But the beauty of this is you can add little components at a time. And, you know, this was a span of a 3-year project getting to this point.
This is something that I've noticed a lot with audio over IP. And, of course, I've been singing that tune for a long time working for Telos. And other companies are, you know, lots of people are doing it now. And now that we have AES 67 as an audio standard over IP, makes things, you know, pretty safe to buy whatever brand you want to buy. But what I've noticed is, and Chris, you've seen the same thing in your experiences, that if a broadcaster will go to AOIP for their infrastructure, they find that this is so useful, they'll add more and more to it. They may have just done one or two studios, and they realize how easy this is and how beneficial it is, and then they'll go whole hog, and they'll add another studio, then say, hey, let's do our phone system. And they'll add, you know, like a Telus VX system, and then they got phones in all the studios from SIP, you know, from SIP VoIP services. And so, yeah, I found that you can start small and add to it. You don't have to replace everything at one time. Chris, what do you found?
I found that to be exactly the truth. And you know the story of my Axia experience back in the day at the all news station, and what we discovered we were able to do. This is from the workflow side. So the technology we all know about. Okay, you read the books, you understand it the whole bit. What we were about, what I was trying to implement, was the workflow. How do we solve some of the questions that the programming folks had regarding how do we improve this? How do we do this? We want to do more of these things. So when we introduced audio over IP in the case of the Axia system, and discovered what we could do remotely on location, doing, say, in the case of election coverage, presidential or local city elections, we could actually put our anchors on us off-site and still access the entire newsroom operation through the computers that we normally use. In the case, we had Burley, and then we had Axia for the other infrastructure for audio. And the fact that we could route, move things around like IFBs and change stuff around at the off-site location during the programming, the program director, the news director, the producers were ecstatic. They're like, wait a minute, we've never been able to do this before because it required another person at the other end of a telephone. Okay, switch to City Hall. Nope, go to Democratic. Go to Republican. Nope, you got the wrong one. Now, sitting at the producer's desk, we had a computer screen, and all they had to do is click on the little virtual boxes that are IFB routing. And they go, okay, segment 20, we're going to segment 20. Boom, 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 boom. IFB has been routed. They're going live. Seamless. Now this is way back in the early days. Yeah. So fast forward to today, what Kevin's pointing out and what you're saying, it's about scalability. So you're a small operation, maybe a medium or a large, and you decide to do a little bit of introduction of audio over IP, and all of a sudden realize, wow, we can now do what we never could do before. And then the wheels start to turn. So that's how it goes.
Wow. Sorry. I'm hearing interesting noises.
Sorry, that's my dog howling at the ambulance going by outside.
That's great. You have to introduce us to your dog sometime. Great. Hey, so Kevin, we're going to take a break, but you know, in the second part of our show, I mean, look, every time I talk to a guest or talk to Chris or talk to people, Alex Hartman, for example, he's a guy that's done a lot of virtualization. I get my whistle wetted, and I want to do this. I want to know more about it. I want to figure out how to do this. And sometimes it seems like a steep hill to climb to start to figure out how to virtualize stuff. And I guess I'm just afraid of stubbing my toe too many times. Hey, I've installed Linux 200 times, and every time I do, it seems like I do something that messes it up, and I can't back out of it, and I got to start all over because I don't know what I'm doing. And I would like for you to be able to tell us about your own journey into virtualization, because you seem very comfortable with it now, but I'm assuming you weren't always comfortable with it. And I'd like to find out how you got from, I don't know much about this, to where you are now. You have a lot of confidence. You know what to buy. And I love the buying stuff off eBay. I do a lot of that too. For my own radio stations, I buy Ethernet switches, Cisco switches off eBay, but I buy two. You know, if I need one, I buy two.
Right.
Because it's so cheap. By the way, time we bought a switch. I needed one in the little town of Cleveland, Mississippi, and I needed a little 8-port Cisco 2960 switch, and I bought one, and I got it in, and I knew I was going to have to wipe it clean, you know, and then reconfigure it. And this one had previously belonged to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. So I can't imagine where the switch was. Anyway, you never know what you're going to get. Hey, our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store, and they represent a whole range of equipment, lots of manufacturers, almost all of them basically. And you may want to check out the Henry Sportscaster. Let's have a look at the Henry Sportscaster right now. You know, the Sportscaster is an audio control system for managing the audio portion of a sporting event, radio or video broadcast. When you use the Henry Engineering Sports Pods, well, the Sportscaster creates an integrated system that includes all of the essential audio functions, including audio mixing for air or for webcast, headphone audio management distribution, off-air intercoms, That's part of it. Sportscaster is a one-box solution that's it's comprehensive, and yet it's intuitive and easy to use. Well, by integrating all these functions in one device, the Sportscaster eliminates the need for multiple mixers, multiple distribution systems, lots of headphone amplifiers, intercoms, power supplies, and complicated wiring. The Sportscaster gives you all these essential functions in a compact 1RU box. It's really amazing, especially when you couple this with, as I mentioned, the Henry Engineering Sports Pods. So you take this Henry Sportscaster out to a remote broadcast, to a ball game, we're right in the middle of basketball season. And so if your system isn't doing what you want, get this thing. Baseball season's coming up. This is perfect to take out to the ball game. Get your main play-by-play announcer, your color announcer, your field announcer, your field reporter, and you can even bring a producer along and have a producer talking to these people if you want to do that. It includes a party line intercom between producer, talent, and the field reporter. If you have camera operators, if your radio station or cable system or small TV station is televising ball games or parades, whatever. You can use the intercom system. It's got a camera operator headphone output. It's got talk back from producer to camera operators. Inputs for things like crowd mic, the PA announcer, if you want to include that. It does have a cue bus to audition auxiliary sources and a main program output, of course, to go to air or go to a streaming device. Just so many cool things about this. I mean, the options that come with it are just amazing. You know, Hank Landsberg, he's the owner of Henry Engineering. And those of us who have been in broadcasting know that Hank really thinks out his products. He thinks about what does the broadcaster need to absolutely get this job done in the most flexible way, but also in an easy way. I mean, Hank's gear is always easy to use. So I think this is just an amazing device. I mean, Hank put a lot of thought into the Henry Sportscaster Sports Broadcast Audio Control System. Where do you get it? Well, you can call our friends at Broadcasters General Store, BGS. Their phone number is 352-622-7700. I've got it memorized. How about that? 352-622-7700. Or see them on the web at bgs.cc. Not .com. It's .cc. If you call them, and that's the way I like to deal with BGS, they are so friendly. Every one of the salespeople has got this amazing computer system, custom software that they've been writing and perfecting over the years to get you quick information, quick availability and ordering information, the best pricing. And then when you're waiting for delivery, they can tell you where it is, how long it's going to take to get there, if it's overnight, if it's available in a couple of weeks, just what the deal is. I love these folks. Good people in Ocala, Florida at Broadcasters General Store. Thanks a lot, Henry, Hank Landsberg, the Henry Sportscaster, and BGS.cc for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right. Kevin Bunty is our guest today. Chris and I are talking to Kevin about virtualization. Yes, it's a topic we've talked about a lot. And you know, one reason I'm passionate about this is because I know that that's where we're going to be. I mean, when you order... When you deal with your bank online, do you think they're running little, you know, Dell or HP desktops running their website? No, they got servers doing that, and they got backups of servers. If something dies, bam, they can switch over very quickly. Almost any online service you're dealing with is doing this. You deal with Netflix, you deal with Google, you deal with any company, and even small companies that have their websites and their functionalities hosted by a data center. You know, there's more than one thing running. I mean, they've got backups, or most of them do. And I really believe that broadcast infrastructure. I mean, not only do I believe that, it's moving there, and I believe that someday we're going to be very much there. Now, does that mean less interaction for talent? It doesn't have to. I mean, it could, but talent can be just as involved in a future where things are virtualized than they are now. In fact, it can be even easier. I mean, how'd you like to, instead of doing your morning broadcast from a fixed studio in a building somewhere downtown, you can do your show as well as you do now from a coffee shop or from your own home or from, you set up a pop-up radio station in a park, because all the cool stuff that you need and that you deal with is all in a data center. Punch it up, deal with it. Feeds happen automatically. Stuff gets ingested and you're there controlling it. You've got your microphones. You're talking to people, whether they're local or remote. What I'm saying is we as broadcasters can really use this technology to make better radio than we make now. We really can. Now, it's like anything, sure, it can be used for evil too, right? We can fire all the disc jockeys, turn the switches on and go home, but then who wants to listen to that? And we already have that in, you know, Spotify and Pandora, right? So I'd love to see a world where our talent has a really easy time making all this happen. And we get lower costs and higher reliability and ultimately better quality. So, Kevin, like I said, man, I want to learn how to do this. And now I want you to take us through your own learning journey. And let's see if that's maybe an option for me or other engineers out there. How'd you get started in this virtualization?
Well, two things really quickly. You said you always had a spare Cisco switch, spare network lights. Uh-huh. Have them on hand. Know where they're at. The other thing is where you mentioned is like, oh yeah, doing a show from the coffee shop or something like that. You know, we're in Ohio. We get snow. We had a footfall and one storm sometime this year, you know, this winter. And we have it set up where our radio program director, who has a morning show on our AM, she did it all from her house already. Same with our morning FM guy. He did it all from his house. He didn't have to come into the studio. You know, we didn't do it live directly from there, but we had it set up. So he just recorded real quick, sent it off, dropped it in the automation, and away he went. Nobody knew he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to be. Mm-hmm. But how I got here was a little bit of trial and error. When I first started working for this company, I was actually a master control operator on the TV side, and I've worked my way up to chief engineer. And I was always fascinated with computers. I went to DeVry University and for electronic computer technology. And so I was always had this fascination, and that's kind of the key, that you have to have this fascination. You want to know. So I made friends with the IT here because they were in a different department. Actually, they weren't within engineering. So I made friends with them, just kind of curious on what was going on. And they have started slowly incorporating some virtual machines into their things. You know, they started off small, slowly grew. I think by the time that they left and I took over, they had probably, I want to say, just under 20 virtual machines running, doing various things. Some of them probably only got used once a month. Others was the main website. And so when I took over, I had to learn some of this. So it was a little trial by fire. And I was also the only person here. I took over engineering and I had no help. And I'm running an AM, FM, three FMs, an AM and the TV side. And the classic engineering tale of being at six places at the same time. And as I was just kind of maintaining the virtual machines at the time and really didn't understand them all that well. And as I started, you know, just being exposed to it more time, I realized this does allow me to be in six places at the same time. I can work on this machine while I'm on this machine, while I'm on this machine, you know, and I was just changing tabs in a browser. And it's like, okay. And then I had, unbeknownst to me, I don't know why he really wanted to work here, but he did. I'm very thankful that he did. Is there was a computer shop here in town. They closed down. He was looking for help. I brought him in, and he had experience with this. And I learned quite a bit from him. And now we're on about the same par as engineers love to do. Now we argue back and forth on how it should be set up. And, but I'm the boss, so I always win. And so that was very helpful with me. And whenever he wasn't around, you know, after hours, you know, because my brain's spinning, it's like, okay, what else can I do? What else can I do? You know, I was surprised on how much information really was available online. I mean, it's just a quick Google search. It's like, how do I do this? And, you know, the places I went to the most was YouTube and Reddit/r/homelab. And, you know, there's just these people who are truly just trying to see is like, okay, well, we want to do this in a commercial setup, but let's see, you know, can you do this where you run a storage system in a virtual machine that's connected to another storage system? And it's like, I don't know why you would do that, but here's how you would do that. And, you know, then you always get people arguing back and forth. It's like, well, maybe this would be an actual example of why you would do it. And so that's where I learned a lot of my information from. And then just getting my hands in there and, you know, making mistakes, sometimes intentionally making mistakes. It's like, well, I don't know what this does. Well, let's go find out. And it's like, oh, I just crashed everything. Let's not do that again. Good thing for backups. Fortunately, I only did that once. And it was just trial and error. And as I got through, it was like, none of this is as hard as I originally thought it was. You know, and I know a lot of, I've came across a lot of engineers that are like, bruh, why would you virtualize that? Too many eggs in one basket, as you referred to earlier. And I'm realizing it's like, yeah, it's a lot of eggs in a basket, but it's also made out of titanium. And, you know, good luck breaking it. If you break it, good job. You really messed it up. That's kind of my story on how I got into that.
Yeah. I kind of see a real parallel here. Just 15 years ago, when we started introducing the notion of audio over IP to engineers, and I was going around demonstrating audio over IP systems at SBE meetings and to broadcasters, and you know, at that point, a lot of engineers' experience with computer networking was frustration when a salesperson would call and say, I'm hitting print, 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 and it's not printing. I clicked print 50 times, and it didn't print yet. And then you go find whatever the problem was, usually a paper jam in the printer. And then, you know, guess what? You get 50 copies of that sales proposal and wasted a whole lot of paper. My point is that our experience as engineers, broadcast engineers, with computer networks 15 and 20 years ago was not always very happy. We may have had some crummy gear. One time I had a little Ethernet switch that just decided one day to start spewing garbage all over my network, right? And so everything came to a grinding halt until I figured out what it was, disconnected it, then everybody was happy again. So we had that point for a lot of us. A lot of us didn't get comfortable in putting, wait, you mean I want to put my radio station's audio over a network? Are you kidding me? I have trouble printing over the network. And once we showed them the more professional grade hardware, Cisco or other, you know, high end switches properly configured, with quality of service being specified and obeyed, and we find out that, hey, this actually does work. It works really, really well. Sure, I can do things to mess it up, but I can do things to mess up in the analog or AES EBU digital world, right? And so now, and I realize there's plenty of industries that are well ahead of broadcast. But speaking as a broadcast engineer myself, I'm comfortable enough that virtualizing the job of lots of individual computers and systems, it probably can be a good idea. I just got to understand how to get comfortable with it. So I'm not using a Walmart router, right? Or the equivalent thereof in a virtualized system. I want to use the good stuff that's known to be reliable and known to be good. So that's what I'm, you know, working on discovering. Chris, I'm guessing you kind of went through a little bit of the same yourself, where you were used to the old crummy or consumerish version of some technology and said, wait a minute, we're going to use this for broadcast. Oh, wait a minute, Chris, I forget. You're always on top of the latest technology to use for broadcast. That's what you do.
Trust me. There's been a lot of trial and error, a lot of mistakes and, what do you call stub toes, if you will. But in the early days, yes, when networking and IT or MIS for some that really remember back in the day, the understanding of what Ethernet could do and how it functioned was so foreign to many folks that in broadcast, where we're so used to, and it's just by design, mission critical, always on. There is no, send, resend, acknowledgement packets. There's no TCP, concepts. It's all UDP. Once it's gone, it leaves the studio. Once it left the transmitter, it's gone. There is no handshaking. To try and understand that this new technology, Ethernet, has all these things. And oh, by the way, the collision light on the Switch, it's okay if it's flashing because that's actually what it wants to see. But yeah, a lot of folks, I mean, I remember working at one place. And remember back in the early days of Switches, and I'm sure Kevin remembers and knows this too, you didn't have the ability to block or properly pass packets from port to port. So everything was just a flood. And sometimes you could flood the entire Switch legitimately, if you will, but the onboard processing of the Switch was so rudimentary or incapable of handling, the Switch would just collapse. And you wouldn't know that because everything downstream was going berserk. So you're going after that thinking the Switch is normal because the lights are flashing. So yeah, there was a huge learning curve. I mean, I remember folks using Switches after Switch, you know, 1, 2, 3. I remember one place they were having issues with the traffic system, Marketron, I think it was, and Marketron worked just fine and when it wasn't connected to the network. Why? We had 3 or 4 switches cascading all the way down the hallway to extend the Ethernet cable. that's what I was told was the reason. But anyone knows that if you start cascading switches, what happens? But think of it back in the early days when the switches were very, you know, weren't designed to handle a lot of things that we put them to in the broadcast world. And, it's come a long way. But now, today, I mean, I have no problem putting things on network and doing a lot of stuff. And I always say, and I've had calls from folks, you know, which is the better one to get switch-wise or a router? What should I do? He said, I always say, look at the application. Do not look at price alone and understand that, you know, what it is you need. What type of switch? Layer 3, layer 2? What are you doing? What's important? Just like Kevin pointed out, he has 2920s from Aruba. And others may say you should just go with Cisco. Well, you know, if you look at the specs of 2 of those products, they're very close for the application you need. You may not need to go crazy. Maybe some places you do have to do Cisco because that's your corporate policy. End of story. I get it. But I've put the equivalent HPs, the old Pro Curves. Matter of fact, there's one on. I have one in operation right now in Iraq at a transmitter facility testing out some IP audio over IP distribution. So I'm using a Pro Curve, and it's working just fine. And even though they're a Cisco house, they were very upset. I said, look, for what we're doing, this is doing just fine. If you want to buy a Cisco switch, feel free to get it. Otherwise, I'm not spending the money for something that's just doing literally 256K of audio over IP. I'm not going to spend $10,000 for switches to connect it. It just doesn't make sense.
Kevin, you alluded to looking up videos on YouTube, and my goodness, yeah. I've been able to do that for a lot of projects around the house and fixing cars and things like that. And also a lot of information on Reddit. And what was the subreddit you referred to?
Home Lab.
Home Lab. Okay. So
yep,
what do you learn on Reddit /r/Home Lab?
Found out, you know, us as humans, we can be pretty rude at times, to put it gently. Also, if you just scroll through there, you'll see all kinds of crazy scenarios that you never think about. And you go, huh, I never thought of that. You know, that may actually work for something for this system over here that I have. And it's like, and I'm like, okay, well, I look at computers and every type of machine I have in my plant here, and I go, do I really need a piece of hardware doing this? So, any chance I could get rid of something, I'm going to, but I'm not just removing the physical aspect of it. You know, we have satellite delivery for our TV side, you know, It had a full Dell server. And we've gotten rid of that now just by having to get a little crafty with the network aspect to get it to work with DVB-IP. And so it's getting an IP signal from a satellite, connecting into our switches, sending it to the virtual machine, and storing the satellite programming, which we then run it through in a transcoder and get it ready for our video playback system. You know, there used to be a box dedicated just for that. And, you know, I had a question. It's like, hey, I need to get DVB-IP, which is TCP without the return authorization because it has the additional checksum put in. I still don't fully understand that part. But somebody's like, oh, yeah, here, just do this. And check this setting, check that setting. Make sure you set your own VLAN for all that so you don't get any stuff you don't want on that network to get in. And that was it. you know? So it's just, there's a lot of helpful people out there, but, you know, take some of it with a grain of salt.
Well, like advice you find anywhere on the internet. Yeah. One thing that you mentioned briefly was that you had your business phone system virtualized, yes, running in a VM. So you have something like, mm-hmm, what, FreePBX or something like that running?
FreePBX. It's exactly, okay, FreePBX. And we have SIP.us as our SIP trunk provider. And okay, it was a direct plug and play. And it was actually a lot easier than another physical voice over IP appliance that I helped set up in another company here in town. And there, you know, you had to go through, manually enter everything, and because it was their own proprietary system, with the free PBX and with our SIP trunk provider, they're like, oh yeah, here, go into your system update panel, click, mm-hmm, upload module, apply this module, apply it, you know, then type in your password, and away you go. You're done. So, and that's the beauty with the open source, is that everybody, yeah, can write modules for everything.
Yeah. The last 2-3 days here, I've been at Telos. So I've been, you know, setting up our NAB demos that I was mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I actually, one for NAB and one for Broadcast Asia. And the NAB one, we have free PBX running in a virtual machine on some computer that's also doing a bunch of other stuff. And for Broadcast Asia, we're running free PBX on a Raspberry Pi, and that's going to provide telephony example connections, you know, between various, mm-hmm, devices. So it's not like a whole office worth of stuff. So let's get back to the notion of if I wanted to educate myself a bit, let's say I've got a cast off computer, some desktop computer. What, I heard there's a free version of VMware, like VMware ESXi, correct, or something like that. What's out there what should I get? Or there's Proxmox, there's VirtualBox, there's virtual, mm-hmm, various virtualization things. What do you think I should start with and start playing with?
The easiest one to start off with, I would say, is VirtualBox. Matter of fact, the we use for our storage system here, we have Zigma NAS with our own customizations applied to it, but it's got VirtualBox built into it. So you can load that up there, throw a couple hard drives in there. You can have a home NAS ready to go, and you can run a couple of VMs right on top of it. At my house, I actually have an old derelict computer that I got off of a relative. I can't even remember which one now. And I'm running the Zigma NAS on it. I got a whole bunch of used hard drives just from – and the typical IT cliche is like, oh, you know how to fix a computer, here, can you fix this? It's like, that's broken in half. No. And, or I won't. So you just take, you know, any spare parts you can get, you throw it in there. But in the VirtualBox appliance in there, I have my router. I use OpenSense or sometimes PFSense. I go back, mm-hmm, and forth as my router software. My daughter loves playing Minecraft, so I have a Minecraft server running. I have a remote administration virtual machine running, so, you know, if I'm at home and it's like, you know what, I'm having problems accessing this IP of ours internally, I want to see how it does externally, I can log into that, run a end mapping tool, and go ahead and see what ports are open, if I set the router up properly, or if there's a connection problem or whatever, you know, I could do that from there. And, you know, so there's four machines running off of one, and that CPU in that machine has a total, I forget the terminology, but it's a TPW of, it's a, how many watts it's consuming is 17 watts. I have 16 gigs of RAM in there, and it's a very low power machine. I plugged a kilowatt into the thing, and when the hard drives are idle, it's consuming just over 25 to 30 watts of power. You know, I start watching a movie that I have stored on the hard drive that goes up to about 100 watts of power, but, you know, it is saved so much. I don't have to have all these extra computers running. I don't have all this fan noise. I don't have to have a you know, I don't have to have my cable modem. I don't have to have my NAS at, you know, that I have for home to store our pictures. And I don't have to have this Wi-Fi router. You know, it's like, oh, they stopped providing software updates for my Wi-Fi router. So now I have to go to the store and buy another Wi-Fi router. I don't have that anymore. So it makes, it's a little bit of frustration at first to kind of learn it and get it set up. But once you get comfortable with it, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, my router died at home. Okay, I'll go ahead and set up this VM here real quick. Then you got the catch 22. It's like, okay, how do I download the software if my router's not working? But you figure it out. So
take the laptop to a Starbucks and download.
Right, right. I've done that before. I've actually gone to a coffee shop and blew out the operating system on my computer, reinstalled Linux. Using their Wi-Fi. It was 20 minutes past closing. They're like, sir, can you please leave? So
I'm almost done.
Almost done. Let me finish.
Gosh. Hey, we got to take our last break. Kevin Bunty is with us. So is Chris Tobin. We're talking about virtualization. And remember, Kevin's in a small market. He's in Zanesville, Ohio, which is market TV market 200 plus, right? What about 210, 209, 208?
9208, something like that. I haven't looked up recently.
Yeah, so depends on if the visiting basketball team is in town or not. It's not a not a huge place. We're talking about virtualization kind of, and how to. Yeah, exactly. All right, our show this week in Radio Tech. Oh, stand by because we each have a tip of the week coming up, and Chris, I'm sure, has a good one. He always does. Kevin Bunty is going to have a good one, and I've actually got a tip of the week this week. So we'll be right back. Our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Lavo at lavo.com/twert.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual-mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes, and enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lavo.com/twert.
Thanks a lot to Lavo for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And do go to the website at Lavo, lavo.com/twert. If you go there, it'll take you right to the radio equipment, and it'll let Lavo know that you heard about it here on This Week in Radio Tech. So thanks so much. All right, it's time for some tips of the week, and I'm going to run first here just because I got the stuff real handy here. So today, in setting up for my podcast, I made a big boo-boo. Okay, so I've got this mic arm right here that I'm not using because I keep forgetting to bring the collar for this that adapts that size. I think that's about a 6-millimeter stud to adapt that to a standard, you know, I don't have one here handy, to a standard mic holder, right? With that big, really tiny thread pitch that's always easy to cross thread, you know, standard mic thing. And so, and I couldn't find an adapter anywhere. So I couldn't use this thing to hold the microphone. And, oh, man, what am I going to do? Well, I've got a mic way over here. Let me grab it. I could have handheld this mic. And I have before in the past. I've also, but I just didn't have a good way to hold it. I didn't want to handhold this thing the whole time. Well, guess what I got with me? I've got this Sennheiser wireless mic, and I've had the best luck with this Sennheiser wireless mic. It's just been really awesome. Let me take care of that. It's been really awesome. Now they're not cheap, but they work well. So this is the Sennheiser AVX series. And I've talked to Sennheiser about this. They warned me that, well, it's great for voice. It's not actually full audio spectrum because it actually uses the same chipsets as the DECT, D-E-C-T, telephones. So they weren't designed to be 20 kilohertz bandwidth. I'm not sure what they are, but I think they sound pretty good. So if you're doing, you know, video recording, and in my case, the receiver is just down here by my side plugged into a USB adapter for my laptop. But this little guy here is what I'm transmitting with right now, and the microphone is on here. Here's what the receiver looks like. I've actually got two of these. So here's what the receiver looks like. You may have seen these before, and they do have an XLR connector on there and about 15 hours worth of battery time with a rechargeable battery that's right there. You can, and then here I also have the handheld version right here. So you can pair these together. You can unpair them if I need to pair this one with the other receiver. It's easy to pair. This one also lasts a good 10 or 12 hours of battery time. And anyway, it works really well. So I've used them typically with video recording. But today, the easiest thing to do was to just put the lavalier mic right here. And we're transmitting a grand total of about a foot and a half from the transmitter to the receiver. But it does work. And it really saved my bacon today when I didn't bring the right hardware to mount a microphone. So they're anywhere from $700 to $1,000 for a microphone and the receiver, depending on if it's the handheld mic or the belt pack, which is pretty spendy. But you know what? You can easily go spend $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000 on wireless mic systems like they use at the TV station where I do some work at. So you can spend a lot more, and these are really, really good quality. So I guess for the money, they're pretty darn good. So the Sennheiser AVX series have saved my bacon several times. That's my tip of the week. Chris Tobin, have you got a tip for us today?
Well, you know, it's a tip technology. We're talking networking. So I've been working on a project, and it's been pretty cool. I'm actually using a product, an application called Zello, Z-E-L-L-O, and it's an internet two-way radio setup, or actually it simulates a two-way radio concept, but it's over the internet. It's all IP. So if you have an iOS device or Android, this is what it looks like. That's the push-to-talk button, yes. And then if you want, you can actually purchase. They have radios, internet radios, that actually look like a two-way radio, but it's over the internet. So I have a friend of mine who's at the other end, somewhere out on the end of Long Island, which is 123 miles from here. Let's see, 702, 722. Let's see if we get anything.
722, this is 702, I receive you.
Okay, that's over the internet, over Wi-Fi here in the apartment, and he is out in a place called Sag Harbor, Long Island, so that was over the internet. And that's using a codec that's pretty close to G.722. So you take that and attach it to one of your traditional RF radios. Okay, this is just a regular RF. And now you have yourself an extended system. Now, why would I explain and show this to you? Take for example, this week, and I'm going to be doing a broadcast for a sports group, an internet group, and they have several people running cameras and producing and stuff. Believe it or not, the easiest thing you can do is rather than use a cell phone and hope that's working in the basement of the sports bar, which is not always the case, you take these little devices and you create a conversation group. And when I press the button, all of a sudden now, all five phones or whatever devices can hear me at once. So it's like a producer's cue. I thought it was pretty cool. At first, I was like, this is nothing. But there is opportunity here. If you're a radio station or even TV facility and you've got stuff going on and you're trying to figure out ways to communicate that makes sense rather than tie up your two-way gear if you have it, this type of technology might make sense. You could use your smartphones. You can get dedicated internet radios. And by the way, this device in my hand supports 4G LTE, SIM cards, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, and Verizon. So you can actually use the data plan on your cellular card and make this talk on over the internet. There's a whole industry out there with this stuff. It's pretty wild. Just throwing it out there just for anyone interested in trying to do something different and figuring out, you know, cell phones are not always the, smartphones are not always the best way to communicate inside a building and running around because it's just what it is. But this is pretty cool, and the quality of the audio is spectacular. And latency, it actually does a test. I mean, this connection is showing latency of 42 milliseconds.
Wow. So yeah. I just downloaded the app. I'm signing up now. So we'll give that a try afterwards. Cool.
Yeah.
That's Zillow with an E, not Zillow. That's the real estate appraisal and sales
correct.
Site.
It's Zillow. Z E. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's very handy. It's actually, it can open up opportunities and ideas. And this weekend will be a first test that we're going to try some wild stuff. So we'll see how it goes.
I've been missing my Nextel push to talk. So maybe this will replace that. Right.
It could.
All right, Kevin Bunty's been our guest from Zanesville, Ohio. Kevin, have you got a tip to leave with our viewers and listeners?
I do. I don't know if many people think about it very often, though, but, you know, we have these tower sites sometimes out in the middle of nowhere. Don't forget that these will actually make very good data backup points to have an off-site location. So you don't have to pay Dropbox or Google or Amazon to have a backup. You can actually go ahead, find some free software. You know, I mentioned Sigma NAS earlier. Find an old computer. Take it down to a tower site. If you have a point-to-point data link with a Ubiquiti or we use Mimosa, you can have set up your own personal little cloud data backup location. Back up your personal stuff or back up the business stuff. Hopefully it never happens, but if your studio ever were to burn down, you can still have a copy up of all your stuff, all your music, all your liners, all your ads. You can all have it right there ready to go. And then if you do the virtualization, you can actually spin up a VM right down there, and then you're back on the air from the from the transmitter site. So
that's a great idea. You know what? I've got a lot of the infrastructure to get that done and haven't done it yet. So shame on me. I need to get that accomplished.
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. We have the stuff there. Someday may come along sooner than you want. So good idea. Use the infrastructure you have and a cast off computer and a NAS or, you know, hard drives in it. Hard drives are fairly cheap now, so it's worthwhile. Save your bacon. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Bunty is it WHIZ Media? Group, is that it?
That's correct. WHIZ Media Group.
All right. Well, so we'll look for you. Keep Facebook and then let us know what you're doing. I'd love to hear your opinions on stuff.
Hey, not a problem. I'll catch you at NAB.
That's right. Yeah, we'll be out there. So we'll see you there in about a month. Mm-hmm. And Chris Tobin, thank you for being here. And hey, Chris, surely on an upcoming show, we'll get to hear about your adventures in the basement.
Yes, I will document and make notes and definitely it's pretty wild. This opens up some opportunities, at least some of the work that I'm doing. And I think others, if they look beyond the proverbial box, you'll see that this makes sense and it's cheaper than paying the cell rates that you have to pay for phone calls.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that that too. All right. Hey, we got to go. And I really want to appreciate, thank Kevin Bunty and Chris Tobin for being with us today. I'm Kirk Harnack. I've been doing the show, hosting it here from the Telos Alliance in Cleveland, Ohio, from their demo room here. I want to thank Suncast, our producer, for producing the show today. Thanks so much. And Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We're going to be back next week for another episode of This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks a lot. See you next week. Bye-bye.